This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And usually we're not as intelligent as that bumper.
Or riveting.
No, that's right. We're mostly screwed.
Okay, we have David Smith, President and CEO of Robinson Helicopters, and Francois LaSalle.
Yeah, that's correct.
President and CEO of Vertical Aviation International.
You pronounced it perfectly.
I never had such a cool title in my whole life. Where do I get one?
One of a kind.
Yeah. All right, and we want to talk about the Vertical Lift Center. Is that what that was called? Yes. Mm-hmm. What is that? Right off the bat.
Well, David's just throwing me under the bus.
So yeah, that's right. I just got winded from the parking lot.
He's been running from the parking lot. Yeah, the traffic getting in is a nightmare. Yeah. Well, look, you know, we appreciate EAA's engagement with the vertical lift community, the investment that you guys have put into this. I was speaking with Jack Pelton the other day. I did a podcast with him, and he was talking about the Vertical Lift Center and how we try and educate the community on what's in the pipeline in terms of advanced air mobility, drone world, and of course helicopters. Yeah,
that's a big subject.
Yeah, and you'll see our footprint is starting to grow here at Oshkosh. So, Jack has recognized that, and that's why they put the investment behind it. And so, I think with Robinson, who are playing a major part in this, you know, it's fantastic to be here with the Robinson team with David and everybody else too. Talk about helicopters predominantly, are they?
Sure. Helicopters and drones. We've got both on display for the...
That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't know you guys were into small drones, unmanned drones, and now you're also into full-sized unmanned helicopters.
That's right. We've got a bunch on display that include ones that we're delivering already for national defense. A lot of our customers are law enforcement or, you know, inspection type for infrastructure inspections. So a lot of uses, and one of the best things about a show like this is you can talk with the young folks that may not know all the things that Vertical Lift touches and in the world around them, you know?
Yeah, it's opening up. Mm-hmm. But who came up with the idea of say, hey, let's take this R-44 and rip all the seats out of it and make it unmanned?
Yeah, we've had some really great customers, actually, who've originally come up with these ideas. 25 years ago, DARPA did a project on one of our aircraft to do the earliest really large vertical lift unmanned drones. And that work was foundational and then became, players in the commercial space started to look at it as how can you automate these very, very long missions that oftentimes are dull, dirty, or dangerous, or all three, and you have to manage that exposure of crews and all the safety implications. So, you know, this is, I think, a perfect use of an environment where we have plenty of aircraft. We want to build more pilots and help develop that. That's why we're right next to a lot of our flight school partners out there. UND's a long-term customer of ours, and they make a ton of aviators each year. But the world needs more vertical lift than the pilot pipeline can create, you know.
Right. Well, it's unfortunately rather expensive to get into vertical flying, which hopefully you guys can fix that.
That's right. We're trying. Yeah. You'll see. I think the R-22 is still the workhorse of a lot of the training business, and it's been a while since we really sort of renewed our commitment to that. So we're putting a lot of our R&D, internal R&D, to improve the product, give customers more value for the dollars they spend. And so my hope, and I think Frank's original vision, is that these aircraft can operate close to the price of a fixed wing. And I think we're definitely the closest of any competitor, and I think we can even take it a step further, and you'll see that in the years to come.
Good.
I did a little bit of a road tour, and I went to Rota, one of the folks that you were doing some work with, and we had a look at the facility, which was amazing because they literally, as you say, they stripped the seats out of the aircraft and they're making these things pilotless, and it was kind of fascinating to see it from the perspective of what they were planning in terms of moving cargo, crop spraying, all that sort of stuff. So.
Are they flying it like the military drones, where you're in a simulated cockpit, or is it, we got a guy out here with a little stick box?
No, they're flying it more like the military. So we actually have a lot of customers that share some heritage back to the Reapers and Predators that we see in the world in defense, and they fly very similarly in a kind of a closed environment, not too different than this radio booth we're in, but with a replication of all the instruments and flight controls that are very similar to the aircraft. So it's great for pilots that are, one of the use cases I think is really exciting is there's a lot of pilots that get medicaled out of commercial helicopter work, and the ability for those folks to come back off the bench and operate a helicopter in a critical mission, agriculture, infrastructure, public safety, and do it with a cockpit environment they're familiar with. They may be remote from the aircraft, but it takes the same skill, it takes the same knowledge of aviation.
And the same experience.
That's right.
Interesting. So now I'm going to have to wonder every time I see one fly by, is that a manned or unmanned?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Wow. I think from our perspective, from Vertical Aviation International, is how do we integrate this, what is going to be diverse community, vertical lift community, with drones, advanced air mobility, and helicopters, particularly in congested airspace. So we put a lot of emphasis behind that, and, you know, working with Robinson, working with the whole community, basically, lobbying on Capitol Hill, working with the FAA, you know, the pumping $12.5 billion into ATC modernization. So these are all things that are kind of in the pipeline, and I think, you know, for us, we've got a couple of things that we're doing strategically, which is workforce development. And it's not the fact that we're going to get rid of pilots or helicopters. These are a replacement for helicopters. That is not the case at all. No, this is an evolution. And there's a place for advanced air mobility. There's a place for the drone community. But how do we integrate that safely?
Yeah, which is really where our focus. How do we make them work together safely?
Correct. Yeah. Because there's going to be a point, right, where a controller can only control so many aircraft. We've got airlines, helicopters, drones, and advanced air mobility, you know, moving people around in congested areas. So that's why there's a huge investment at the ATC modernization. Yeah. So it's an interesting future.
It's time.
Yeah, it's not a dystopian future. It's here. And I think, you know...
Yeah, super great... optimistic future, I think, on this, that we can benefit from all the things Vertical Lift can offer, that really nothing else can do that. So we're excited that this investment from the FAA and modernizing is going to make, you know, every opportunity that we've looked at as a kind of a far-off future much more near. And I think we're you know, in our next 10 years, we'll see these aircraft operating safely and seamlessly, unmanned and manned, in a collaborative way, you know.
And the Amazon drones will be everywhere.
One of the important things about keeping control of one of these drones, if you have a pilot in a booth somewhere, what kind of a link are you using between him or her and the machine?
Sure.
Extension cord.
Yeah, right. Well, the exciting ones, commercial. Yeah, commercial has a lot of really impressive things that are coming to market. Multiple layers of Starlink, for example, it can be both redundant for obscuration of the satellites and things. But you can also have, a lot of these are running in a relatively short distance. Agriculture is probably the best use case. You'll probably, like you do today, you roll out a truck. The truck will probably have an antenna, a satellite tower that you roll out to help improve comms line of sight. And then for the beyond visual line of sight, you'll be mostly satellite links. There seems to be enough variety and enough availability that you can make these missions very durable with redundant paths for different types of satellite communications. But it is something we're exploring very closely, because there's a frequency challenge of how much frequency space is allocated to these types of missions. And down the road, we think that's going to be one of the frontiers that the regulators have to navigate, as well as frequency availability. You know?
Right. Congestion.
Yeah.
Do you see any of these going fully autonomous?
So the military seems like they're the ones that are most excited about a fully autonomous solution. I think some of the drone delivery companies are looking at that, and one of our customers has that mission in mind. The challenge of full autonomy is the trust level has to be just so much higher. And so I think we're thinking much more pragmatically about how to get to a future where pilots can be amplified. And so the idea of one pilot operating inside of a booth not too different than this can operate multiple aircraft that are in varying stages of mission readiness. So they're about ready to deploy. The guy or gal might take control of the aircraft, do the mission, land, and then swap to another aircraft. So their time can be maximized. That really helps things like agriculture, where you oftentimes are limited by the downtime of the aircraft. So if you have multiple aircraft that are prepped and ready, you can cover more ground faster while the weather's good and the winds are calm and that kind of thing, you know.
The equipment you have to add in, I'm assuming, is still less than the weight of a pilot, so you get some increased payload out of it.
That's right. And so I think one of the missions that we're trying to work is the next generation of sensors that oftentimes are derived from the small drones, and you can put them in and they can be redundant and still be lighter weight than what's on a typical type certified aircraft. Actually, the experimental industry is producing some great volume of small sensors and small packages as well. So this is a frontier where we can integrate things that we never would have on a type certified aircraft, but now we can start to do that on a type certified but ultimately an unmanned or remotely piloted aircraft.
That brings to mind, the FAA must be scratching their head on exactly how to classify these machines, because technically they're drones, but they're an awful lot larger than most of them.
That's right. We spend a lot of time trying to navigate what today is a waiver process, and so each one is a case-by-case use case, mission, location, aircraft, all that. And I think down the road, we're optimistic there's a set of rules that are coming out that will allow for beyond visual line of sight and the level of credentialing that's necessary for aircraft development, design, certification, and then ultimately in the fleet management. So I think those things are exciting to us because, you know, Robinson's been doing that for 53 years. We feel very confident that's going to be an easier putt for us than maybe some of the startups that are trying to become aviation companies now, you know.
Well, yeah. The helicopters that you're modifying to be remotely controlled, are they the same as a man-carrying helicopter?
Very similar.
It looks like they just painted the windows black.
Yes. Most of them, you imagine it's the same dynamics, the rotor drive, gearboxes, all that are the same, engines the same. The things that change are in the front where you have less avionics and ultimately a simpler cockpit design for cargo and things like that. So it's a lot of harmony. The things you really care a lot about in aircraft, right, the turning parts are all the same, give you a lot of confidence that you've got available, you know, components for supply and spare parts and all.
Which if you think about it, actually makes a lot of sense, right, because it's already a certified machine.
Standardization.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And it, you know, certification.
Off that.
Yeah. So, when you talk about the FAA and the certification of all these various machines, particularly in the electric vehicles, the electric vertical takeoff, the design philosophy is completely different.
Right.
And
right.
there's a lot of new stuff around battery technology and electric motors and stuff like that. So, there's a lot of work still to do. I think from our side, you know, one of the things that we look at is as this industry plans to grow is workforce development. How are we going to start? Yep. How are we going to get enough pilots, engineers, electrical engineers, and the ecosystem to support it all, the whole ecosystem to support it all is.
Right.
I think, you know, almost designing and certifying and building these things is, I'm not going to belittle that, but probably the easier part of it. I mean, there's two major areas. Mm-hmm. You touched on it, public trust.
Yeah.
Public trust has got to be key, right? And
well,
then second,
I don't want to cut you off, but we're out of time. Yeah.
We're out of time.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Wow. They keep us on a short
leash. Definitely come visit us at the Vertical Lift Pavilion there.
And please come and see us there.
Thank you, Nate Chuli and, David Smith and Francois LaSalle.
That's it.
Perfect.
This is Digital Dave.
And Fast Eddie. And this is EAA Radio.